From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Good morning. I'm Alice Rehan for Brian Lehrer. Can someone be too depressed to be a good parent? How about too old? Or maybe too fat to raise kids? Well, you may have heard China is taking a stand against all that, and against single parents, too. They've just announced new guidelines that place some extreme restrictions on who gets to adopt Chinese orphans. Apparently skinny, married, younger couples will now head to the front of the line. And in case you're wondering why we're talking about Chinese adoptions, keep in mind that more Americans adopt from China than from any other foreign country. Almost 8,000 adoptions last year. Now, one advocacy group that tracks all this says that Manhattan's Upper West Side has the largest concentration of adopted Chinese children in the nation. Now, these rules, which are supposed to take effect in May of next year, have a lot of people upset about this highly sensitive and emotional topic. What makes a good parent? And who should be allowed to adopt children here in America and abroad? Joining me now is Adam Pertman. He's the author of Adoption Nation, How the Adoption Revolution is Transforming America. I'm also joined by Washington Post correspondent Peter Goodman. Adam and Peter, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having us. Thanks very much.
Good morning. So, Adam, what exactly do these new guidelines say? Who can adopt and who can't adopt from China anymore?
Well, it's a little complicated because they don't say you have to be, for example, thin. They say that you can't be obese on a pretty high scale. I'm neither defending or supporting here. I'm describing.
All right.
They say that they want only people between 30 and 50. You have to have been married for 5 years. You have to, if you were divorced, you have to be married for 2 years. If divorced, then for at least five. And you can't be on any antidepressants or any psychiatric medicines. That's the thrust of the new regulations, which, they, by the way, interestingly, they say are temporary, and I'm not sure what that means.
Now, Adam, let me get you to clarify that. Are these guidelines or are they restrictions, i.e. you will not be accepted if you are obese, if your BMI is over 40, whatnot?
When the People's Daily in China described this earlier in the week, or maybe it was last week, they said that other people can apply, but it will take longer. Now, I don't know if that means that they will place special needs kids with other kinds of parents, or if they have, you know, too many kids and they can't place enough with the quote, proper applicants, that they will allow others. I just don't know what it means, and I don't think maybe an agency does. The institute that I had, the Evan B. Donaldson Adoption Institute, is a research organization, not a placement agency, so we don't normally receive, you know, the guidelines. But the really brief answer to your question is whatever China says, that's what we got to do.
I understand. All right. Well, you just referred to it, so let me clarify. In addition to being an author, you're also the executive director of the Evan B. Donaldson Adoption Institute, a national adoption advocacy group. So you look at all of this research, you look at these numbers. How many Americans adopt children in China?
Well, from China, about 8,000.
And that's 8,000 last year.
And the number has been, for the first time in a decade, more than a decade and a half, the number actually dropped in fiscal year 06 to about 6,500 from about 8,000 the year before.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's for several reasons, and again, we don't know for sure because China does what every country does, what it wants to do, and doesn't really explain it. But the answer, I think, is partly they were putting together these regulations, and they slowed everything down until they figured out what it is they wanted to do. And now they've done it, and they say that it's going to speed up again.
So to recap these figures, so about 8,000 Chinese children were adopted in this country last year. What about Americans who adopt within this country? What are your statistics on that?
Well, we just did a project in which we stumbled on all these. The numbers relating to adoption are not very firm. adoption has been, you know, a pretty secretive process in our country for generations. So the research isn't great. We're doing it now, but historically it's not great. We think there are about, I'll break it down real quick for you. Mm-hmm. We think there are about 130,000 adoptions of all sorts in America per year. About 23,000 of those are from abroad, not just China, but other countries, about 23,000. About 15,000 of those are of infants, mostly white infants within the country, in so-called private adoptions, you know, newborns. About 35,000 are from the foster care system, children of all ages, and the remainder are what we refer to generally as step-parent adoptions, though sometimes those are grandparents or aunts, but within the family. Mm-hmm. And that's the breakdown.
So why do Americans adopt children overseas? Are there some distinct advantages financially in terms of the ease, the paperwork?
No, not the paperwork. The answer is that it's a long list. People want to form families. They look for kids who need homes. These are certainly in orphanages abroad, just as in foster care in this country. There are kids who need homes. And the reasons range from humanitarian desires to ethnic issues to hearts just breaking because you remember Romania a generation ago when people
That's
discovered
right.
all those kids. Well, people's hearts just went out to those children in the same way that some people's hearts go out to the little abandoned orphaned girls in they're not orphaned, in fact, abandoned girls in China. So there are lots of reasons to do with birth families, and there are a whole spectrum of reasons. What I try not to do is make judgments about how people should form their families, whether they go through new reproductive technologies or mm-hmm. do it through childbirth or do it through adoption domestically or internationally. Once we start getting to that game, we have kids competing with each other for homes, and that's a really bad game to play.
Right. Now, what about gender, Adam? Is it still an overwhelming number of girls that are adopted from China, or has that changed in terms of the gender balance?
There are some boys, but it's overwhelmingly girls because that stems to China's one-child policy of a decade or so ago. People also just have abandoned little girls, and also the culture has valued in the past boys over girls, and so that leads to abandonment of these little kids.
Peter Goodman from the Washington Post, you lived in China as a correspondent for the Post.
That's right.
For many Westerners here who find these restrictions bizarre, is there a cultural element that we're missing here from the wait to the married couples? Can you give us some insight about that?
Well, I think you have to understand that for people in China, the very existence of a foreign adoption program is problematic in some quarters. I mean, there's been a debate within the government for years. There are some people who see a situation where China has a lot of baby girls who need homes, and there are a lot of foreigners who are willing to provide good homes, and that seems like a good match and a good way to take care of a pretty serious problem. There are other people who see China as being a great power, a great emerging power, certainly, and not a country that's supposed to need to hold out its hand for help to the rest of the world, but more and more a country that comes to the aid and plays a large significant role in world affairs. And the idea that, you know, people have to show up from Europe, from the United States, with dollars in hand to fund orphanages mm-hmm. and leave with Chinese babies and raise them far away, that's disturbing to people in China. So I see these rules, my understanding is that these rules are an effort to strengthen the system such that the government can say, we are certainly looking out for the welfare of these kids. Now, different people can have different views about, you know, what is the best way to safeguard the welfare of the kids. But clearly some people in Beijing want to see these kids living with the people of financial means, people of good health, people with good family values as seen by the bureaucrats making the decision in Beijing.
I'm Alice Rehan for Brian, and Peter Goodman from the Washington Post. Just to follow up on that, some of these requirements or guidelines, as they're being called, are pretty specific. If you've been divorced, you have to have been remarried for 5 years. The income, that's Does that sound like that's a reflection of cultural values, that this is a statement about values that the Chinese government is making?
I think we can get carried away with that. I mean, I think it's a situation where there are more and more people showing up from other countries offering money and homes for Chinese kids. And the government's in a situation where it can be picky. So it's drawing up some rules to try to maximize the welfare of the kids. That's, I think, the best way of looking at that. I don't see a state entity that's got responsibility for raising orphans trying to make sure the homes are the best, you know, according to its cultural norms, you know, being cultural in a sense. I mean, you know, anybody would say, let's try to find the best homes. The question is, you know, what defines the best home?
No,
sure.
I do, if I can jump in, there are other overlays here that I think are cultural. You know, the bias toward married families, I think, is typical in most cultures. In this country, over a third of all children are born to unwed parents. So it doesn't, you know, jibe with our culture, but we have to understand that other people don't do what we do. I think there are also other more subtle elements. For example, I think this is probably, we can't know, no one has said this out loud, we think that this is probably a way of filtering out gay and lesbian adopters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are other agendas at play, but I think for the most part, he's right. You know, most of these regulations, maybe all of them, are at least on paper, at least arguably, meant to ensure the long-term well-being of the kids.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Alice Rhee in for Brian, and I'm talking with Adam Pertman, director of the Donaldson Adoption Institute, and Peter Goodman from The Washington Post. So, Peter, how does this work? How do orphanages run in China? Is it the local government? Explain all that.
Orphanages are run at the local level in China. It's a huge country. It's a country of 1.3 billion people. It's hard to generalize. Some orphanages are very well run and very transparent and make good use of the aid that they're getting through the Foreign Adoption Program and through other programs funded in part by Westerners. But there's a lot of corruption, and a lot of the aid that is being funneled into the country through this program is not helping the kids. I've spoken to a lot of actually Western aid workers who've operated in orphanages who have seen, you know, supplies being carted out the door to be sold. In some cases, we've heard of orphanage directors sending kids abroad for university educations on the strength of the contributions that they're getting from parents who are showing up from the States and Europe adopting kids. It's there are problems. There are well-run orphanages.
Now, is this a money-making enterprise, or can this be construed as a profitable business, as sad as it is to say, for these orphanages?
Well, I don't think there's any question that this program started with good intentions and still has a lot of benefit, and there are mm-hmm. a lot of kids who've been placed in good homes where they're well cared for through this program. I also don't think there's any question that this program has commodified healthy Chinese baby girls, and like just about everything in modern China, it spawned a market. When you have thousands of people showing up from the United States and Europe with crisp $100 bills in hand, and under the Chinese adoption regulations, the last thing that happens is they hand $3,000 in cash money, usually to the orphanage director, you're going to have an incentive system to essentially put healthy baby girls into the proper hands. And unfortunately, we have seen in the last couple of years the clear evidence that there are traffickers that are, in some cases, buying healthy baby girls, in some cases, abducting them and putting them into the system. And that's something that needs to be scrutinized a lot more carefully than it has been.
I think he's absolutely right. The good news is that China's is one of the best-run orphanage and child care systems in the world right now.
Really, the best, one of the best
one
run.
One of the best, and when they see corruption of the sort just being described, and it is corruption and it should be stamped out at every step, we should never be buying or selling children. It just taints adoption and hurts everybody, especially those kids. But the good news is China does clamp down when they find it. They really try to make this as clean and strong a system as possible. And part of the new regs, supposedly at least, are meant for are designed so that China can clean up its act and clean up those orphanages that are having problems. One other quick comment, if I may. I think it would be a really terrible outcome of these new regulations if it means that some kids who really need homes don't get them.
Mm-hmm.
China can have its own morals, its own standards, its own ethics. It's great. Every country needs to do that, and we have to respect that. But we don't have those, and I think the country as a country, ours, should be talking to China and explaining the differences, explaining that there are lots of single parents who make very good parents, gay or straight. Now, that won't make a difference tomorrow. These regulations exist. But as long as there are kids who need homes, we should be arguing as a state that we should maximize the number of parents, not minimize them.
Well, the problem is, though, that there's some evidence that there are now parents in China who are perfectly capable of adopting and would like to adopt, and in many cases are being turned away because an orphanage director who may not be corrupt, who may have the best of intentions, understands that by taking a healthy baby girl and putting them into the foreign adoption program and putting that child in the United States or Europe, they can bring in $3,000 for the benefit, I mean, to care for the kids that are still in that orphanage.
And well, that would be sure. a bad outcome. That would be a bad outcome. Domestic adoption should be promoted. And
well, that's where we are today. And part of the reason why we're there, I would argue, is because adoption agencies in the United States are too busy praising the Chinese authorities for getting to the bottom of problems that actually haven't been investigated fully, namely trafficking, instead of actually pushing for precisely that outcome.
Gentlemen, we'll continue our conversation on the other side of the break. I'm Alice Rehan for Brian Lehrer, and I'm talking with Adam Portman, director of the Donaldson Adoption Institute, and Peter Goodman from The Washington Post. Back in a moment. You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Alice Rehan for Brian, and I'm talking with Adam Portman, director of the Donaldson Adoption Institute, and Peter Goodman from The Washington Post. Well, we have with us now someone who knows his side of the story firsthand. Gongzhan Wu is a director of the China program at the Gladney Center for Adoption here in New York. He specializes in placing Chinese orphans with American parents. Gongzhan, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us your thoughts on these new guidelines. Does it make sense for China to issue guidelines like these?
Yes, I think so. That since we have received all the specifics of those changes, and since also I have been in contact with officials over there before and after those changes are announced. And what I'm trying to do is that, on their side, they feel that it's a necessary, measure to deal with the current situation. The current situation is that basically supply-demand thing, that the significantly increasing demand in the past two, three years, and then the decrease of supply, meaning the availability of babies, for adoption.
Well, could you just break that down for us, Gongzhan?
Sure.
The demand has been increasing for the past few years by what percentage?
I can give the total. Last year, that they placed nearly 12,000 children each just a year. That placement to all countries. And that each year, at least the 10 to 15% of placements, and continuously for the last maybe 3-4 years.
But there's been a decrease in the availability of orphans or children to adopt. Is that correct?
Correct. Just decreased from 1,000 a month to 6 to 7.
Why is that? Why is there this decrease in the number of babies available to adopt?
The reason, there are several reasons behind which have not been, really discussed, on this end. One thing is that the increasing domestic adoption in China, and more Chinese families are adopting children.
I see.
And second is that the normal Chinese families also are able to adopt children from the orphanages.
Chinese families in China or Chinese families outside?
Chinese families in China.
I see.
What they will say, that as I heard from the orphanage director, mm-hmm. they, you know, just the families, they go to the orphanage, they want to adopt children, and when they learn a sizable number of children available, adopted by international families, and they ask about, you know, just what's the, you know, just the why and what's the fees involved, and they say they can pay the same thing and even more.
Now, is that a result of an improving economy, capitalism, that families have more money and therefore can afford to adopt?
Definitely. Yeah, each international family, you know, international adoption that involves a $3,000 donation, you know, just for each adoption.
It's normally $3,000, is that correct?
Correct, mm-hmm. yes. And then you convert it into Chinese renminbi, Chinese currency, it's 24,000 yuan in mm-hmm. China, which for many families, probably that's not a difficult thing to do anymore.
I see.
And then, of course, there's another thing is that in, I think, early year, this year, that in March, May, and March, April, there was a report that concerning about, you know, baby trafficking, you know, just and then Chinese government and public and police department, you know, exposed it and dealt with that and crashed it, that again, you know, just and then punished some of the orphanage directors as well as you know, officials of the social welfare affairs, and put them in the jail or removed from the post at least. So that has a psychological impact mm-hmm. on orphanage directors throughout the country.
I see.
And they don't. They say why? Because there are some gray, you know, just area in those in over there. They're not that clear what is right or what is wrong, and then they're afraid that what they have been doing might be. You know, just have the same consequences.
Mm-hmm. Gongzhan, how many adopted babies do you estimate from China are in the New York region?
25,000. 25,000. Yeah, actually a larger number. Most of the placements, I believe, that is in the northeast region and west coast.
I see. And are the families a subculture here? Do they interact with each other? I know that there is a group on the Upper West Side. Mm-hmm. Do they interact with Chinese Americans? What's the culture like for the families that are here?
Those families, it's interesting that some of the families claim they are Chinese families as well. Like, you know, just they're purely the Chinese families in the traditional sense. But they say that we are Chinese families too because we have a Chinese baby or Chinese, you know, Chinese children. And they tried to, you know, just help their child, you know, to inherit the Chinese culture, tradition, language, you know, everything. And which is a really good, you know, just a good thing for those children, particularly in the Northeast region that, and with such a diversified, you know, just a culture.
So, you know, I've read that you've suggested that families who want to adopt babies right now, if these Chinese restrictions are difficult, that they should try Vietnam.
That was not exactly what I said. And I was suggesting to those families who might be impacted by those new changes.
Mm-hmm.
Then, if China is not an option for them, then Vietnam might be a good option for them to consider.
So you're suggesting as a backup?
That's right. Only for those families will be impacted. On the other hand, there are also the large numbers of families who are not being impacted by those new changes. And they, if I continue to receive you know, applications from those families, and then in that way, at their time, they don't have to wait that long. Because of the more restrictive, you know, just the requirement, and they meet those requirements, they will, you know, just they can wait and
sure.
they can just have children.
Well, thank you very much, Gongzhan Wu,
Director
of the Gladney Center Adoption Agency. Thanks for being here. And to our listeners, are you an adoptive parent of a Chinese or another foreign child? Do you want to be? Have you tried to be? And why did you decide to adopt from abroad? We'd love to hear what your thoughts, any comments you might have. Call in and tell us about it. 212-433-WNYC. You're listening to Brian Lehrer's show on WNYC. I'm talking with Adam Pertman, author of Adoption Nation, How the Adoption Revolution is Transforming America, and Peter Goodman, correspondent for The Washington Post. So, Adam, has your research shown why there is such a demand for foreign babies? What's going on in this country?
A lot is going on in this country. I mean, most of it is in the historic past. It has to do with rising infertility rates. It has to do with the acceptance of single parenthood in this country, which we didn't used to accept. You know, women who had babies out of wedlock, those kids overwhelmingly wound up being adopted.
So it's part of a cultural shift in our values.
That's a big cultural shift. So white infants are not available at the same time. Other historical phenomena, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall, not commonly perceived as an adoption story.
Sure.
But look, all these, we suddenly discovered there were all these orphanages teeming with children who were not mm-hmm. being well tended to. China imposes a one-child policy, not construed as an adoption phenomenon. But sure enough, the availability of Chinese girls becomes big mm-hmm. at a time when the number of infants available domestically is dropping. So there are a lot of reasons to do with birth control and abortion and lots of historic stuff. But the bottom line is that we now adopt more children as a country internationally than the rest of the world combined. And that's a
wow.
reality, as per the subtitle of my book, How the Adoption Revolution is Transforming America. That's a reality that affects us all. You know, what the gentleman from Gladney was talking about, adoptive families are looking at themselves as multiracial, multinational families. That's historically different than what we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the repercussions are white folks are, you know, celebrating Chinese cultural festivals at synagogues. Well, that literally and figuratively.
Mm-hmm.
And that affects a lot of people, the whole community, the whole synagogue, the whole of our country, I argue in the book, because it changes our view of family. It's a very, it's a big, profound institution that is changing a lot of lives.
Isn't there also, though, something of an element of the China fetish? Probably not in the majority or even, you know, a lot, but in some of these adoptions. I went to Guangzhou, which is a city in southern China where every American family has to pass to go and get the visa before they bring their child home. And I asked many parents there, you know, why China? And I got a range of responses. Some of them were, well, you know, we want a kid who's going to do well at math. A man said, well, you know, I really wanted a girl. I'm not so comfortable having a boy. We knew we could get a girl here. And moreover, you know, there's this wonderful history, the Great Wall, Chinese characters, one of the world's oldest cultures. And you thought to yourself, well, this isn't a trinket you're purchasing at the
right.
airport. On
right.
The this is
right.
a baby.
Well,
this is a human
people
being.
People do the same thing in all realms. People try to have boys instead of girls genetically, you know, with genetic playing games with sperm and eggs and times of month. People go to who have insemination go to, you know, genius sperm banks. People who get donor eggs try to get athletic women with high IQs. I mean, I'm not defending any of this. I'm saying that it's not really different than how people form families in other realms too. The vast majority go, and I can, for no great reason, and I don't mean that as an insult. They go because they have a friend who did, or they mm-hmm. read a story about it. They go because they want to become parents. And they perceive this, sometimes right and sometimes wrongly, they perceive this as a good route to achieving the end they want to achieve. I'm not defending some of those bad reasons. I just think that people do it in every realm.
Sure. And now let's take a call from someone who has adopted from China. Jake from Stamford, Connecticut, you're on the line.
Hi there. Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi
there. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You know, when I heard about the guidelines, I think that it might have been a reaction, which could be only in perception, but when you adopt, most of the families pass through the White Swan Hotel in Guangzhou, and what I was surprised that my wife and I were among the youngest there. You know, there was a lot of people.
How old were you when you adopted?
Yeah, and we saw a lot of couples that were in their 50s or over, and we also saw a lot of couples. We saw a lot of single moms. And we saw a lot of heavy people. And, you know, one of the new guidelines, I don't know if you mentioned it, was that you have to have a certain body fat content, I believe.
That's right. It's a BMI. You can't have a BMI of over 40. But actually, I wanted to ask you to clarify, how old were you when you adopted?
Well, I would have been about 38 at the time.
Okay. And this was how long ago?
It was in 2002.
Okay.
So I think there was a perception by some of the Chinese locals that see, you know, all of these heavy set Americans adopting, and they might be having this reaction that perhaps they're doing it so that the children will be born to serve them or something. I mean, I'm sure it's completely not true. I've met a lot of these women, and they were really great, and a lot of them were on their second Chinese adoption. I understand that if you adopt a baby in China, there's a 75% chance you're going to adopt another one. Those were the stats.
So, Jake, that's an interesting statistic. I mean, you adopted a child in 2002. How was that process for you? Was it fairly smooth? Would you do it a second time like those stats bear? Would you bear that out?
Well, I would love to, but we have two children. We have one biological, we're hoping to do it again. And now looking at these guidelines, we see that we would have to do it before we turn 50 and that we would have to keep in shape. And so, make a certain amount of money. You know, it's interesting.
How did the adoption run the first time?
It was beautiful. It was really organized, and you can tell that they do it a lot and that they are used to it. We'd spoken to people, and we'd joined online communities, and we'd heard a lot about the process. So we were pretty prepared for what was coming. I would like to say, though, that they've been talking about a downturn in availability, and part of this might be because China has finally come around and started to give incentives to Chinese families to keep baby girls. I know that they did that in pilot programs in some small communities, and it may have been working. And I applaud that. I mean, it's a terrible thing that the girls are always the ones that are put up for adoption, and they have a really large imbalance of gender now in a lot of areas that they think might cause a lot of problems when these children get to be adult age.
Well, Jake, thanks so much for calling and sharing your experience with us.
No problem.
Peter Goodman from the Washington Post. Does China still have the one-child policy in effect? Is that why there are still so many Chinese children up for adoption?
That's certainly part of it, yeah. I mean, the One China policy has exceptions. Ethnic minorities can have more than one. People can pay fines. It's not enforced uniformly throughout the country. But, yeah, I mean, that's a major impact.
Now, I want to just go back to an article that you wrote earlier this year about corruption and some of the fascinating things you discovered in the course of your reporting, that some of these children who were adopted by American families and by other families are actually abducted, that they aren't really orphans.
Yeah, we don't know how many. I mean, there was one trafficking ring that was publicly prosecuted in Hunan province in southern China. And I spoke to the defense attorneys, and I spoke to the mother of one of the defendants and read the verdict. And it's clear that we're talking about as many as 1,000 kids going back to the 1990s. Through this one province, and this is during a time when tens of thousands of kids are coming out of China, and it points to a systemic problem that really hasn't been looked at in detail. And there's something that I think parents, potential adoptive parents in the States need to focus on. And again, I mean, I think this is a well-intentioned program. I don't think there's any question that it's done a lot of good. But we're in a situation where the supply of kids available for foreign adoptions is set by one state agency in Beijing, the China Center for Adoption Affairs. They determine how many kids can be adopted and where they come from. And that gatekeeper status has value. And the agencies in the states that are able to file applications for these kids are in many cases staffed by people who used to work for the China Center for Adoption Affairs. And the finances are not at all transparent. And I think it's really interesting that as these trafficking cases have emerged, the adoption agencies in the states have, every single one of them has essentially closed ranks and focused on very hard to read statements from China that there's no evidence that any of these kids have ended up in the States, when there's also no evidence any real investigation has happened.
So
that's a sign that there's no problem.
So Peter, it's first of all, explain the economics behind this. How is this working in terms of these abductions, and why is it a lucrative or profitable business?
It's a lucrative business because if you are running an orphanage in China that has connections with this state agency, the China Center for Adoption Affairs, that means that you have the ability to get $3,000 in hand. That means that if you can come up with a kid who the CCAA will then put out for foreign adoption, somebody will show up from the States or Europe and leave with this baby, and you'll be $3,000 richer. And again, some of those people are decent people who are raising funds to run their orphanages, and some of them aren't.
Sure. Well, we'll have to leave it there. I'm Alice Ree, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, and I've been talking with Adam Pertman, director of the Donaldson Adoption Institute, and the author of the book Adoption Nation, How the Adoption Revolution is Transforming America, as well as Peter Goodman from The Washington Post. Thank you both, gentlemen, for joining me today.
Thanks for doing this, Pete.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.